I'm on the road to recovery, step by step. On my pillow, that won't dry. On the road, beyond my ears, I've no sorrow. But today, I don't walk alone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is Patrick. Hey, everybody. I just want to thank everybody for joining us. And before we get started, we're going to dim the lights down and have a two-minute silent meditation. We take these 2 minutes to let the busyness of our day kind of leave us, get connected to God so that we can be receptive to the message. So 2 minutes, and we'll be right back. And if you guys would like to join us in the pews in front of you, we have a prayer, the fog light prayer. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, for those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. Before we get started, just ask that you take a few minutes to get situated, turn off your cell phones and any other noise-making devices. From There Is a Solution, the big book. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Gary to come up and read Spiritual Experience. We read this in this meeting. We feel that it's important. The whole goal of Alcoholics Anonymous is to acquire a spiritual experience to recover from alcoholism. So we'd like everybody to know what one is.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety. Because they develop slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference. Long before he is himself, he finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can never recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Great job, Gary. I gave him about 60 seconds notice that he was going to have to come up in front of all of you. He did a really good job. Again, I'm going to introduce Russell, but before I do, we just ask if everybody can stay situated and refrain from trying to get up and come in and come out and turn the cell phones off as to not distract the people around you as well as the speaker. And this will be, I guess Russell's here for our eighth week now, right? And it's been my pleasure to introduce him. Next week, we don't have a meeting. It is Christmas, but the following week, Zach is going to be up here chairing the meeting. It's been my pleasure to introduce you, Russell. It's very enlightening. It's a great message that you carry, and I know myself as well as everybody else in the room is looking forward to it. Everybody, please help me welcome Russell.
Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic, member of the Carl Gables group, and it's good to be up here with you guys. I've enjoyed myself coming up here, and a little bit of a trek down from wherever the heck I'm at, Homestead, or it's about 40 miles, 50 miles south of here, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981, so I've been road testing this thing for a while. I came in when I was 31 years old. And so I road tested this thing through my 30s. A lot of you guys are in your 30s. Some of you guys are in your 20s. And I road tested it in my 40s. I've been road testing it in my 50s. And now I'm going to be 66. So I've been road testing it in my 60s. And I got married 3 months after I got sober. My sponsor said, don't make any major moves during your first year. I didn't think it was a big deal. So I've been road testing it throughout a marriage. I road tested it through raising four kids, and I'm road testing it through children. And for the most part, I've been self-supporting through my own contributions, and I've been road testing it through working and through life. So, you know, and what I'm going to share with you is my experience with this thing. That's all I got to share. My experience. I'd like to think I'm a devotee of the literature, as well as other literature. The literature this was based on, which includes the Bible, I got involved with that a lot because our big book does encourage church membership, and I did ultimately join the church. I've had three sponsors, all wonderful men, all with, you know, my first two sponsors died, but they had about 30-plus years sobriety, and my current sponsor has 57 years. And besides the sponsors, when you hang out with men like that, I've gotten to hang out and be taught by and watched and observed a lot of mentors who are not necessarily my sponsors, but they were spiritual sponsors in the sense that I watched them and I learned from them. Went to the step meetings and things like that. Did all those things that you do when you have the desire. And I'll talk a little bit about that. I don't really plan a lot about what I'm going to say. I sort of think about where I want to come from. And, you know, it sort of comes upon me what I think I want to talk about. And it's funny. It always seems to happen that whenever it coalesces as to how I want to frame something, I'll have conversations with people before the meeting that's about the thing that I want to talk about. So, and it's all about alcoholism. I'm going to read a couple of things from the book. I started off as a young kid. You may find this hard to believe, but there was a time when I was like 18 or 19 years old. I've got photographs. I can show them to you. And I was interested in what most 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds and 20-year-olds are interested in. And I want to tell you something. I was motivated. I was a motivated guy. I wanted what she had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. And I chased her around the planet through Saturday nights and Sunday nights, through Christmases, and through depression and through self-pity and through lust and through exhilaration. And I chased her. I chased the cars. I chased everything that is about that life. You know, because when you're involved in that life, you know, I'm sort of focusing on the men, but, you know, I am a man, you know, so, I mean, my sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. And, as alcoholics, we all pretty much figure we know everything. I know I did. I was a know-it-all, But what it really is I had a lot of opinions about a lot of stuff, and I was wrong with most of them, although I didn't think I was wrong. So what I talk about now, what I try to talk about now, is basically what I've learned through my experience, you know, going through this deal. I mean, there's nothing like going through sobriety. There's nothing like going through the world sober over a period of 10, 20, 30 years, 35 years to sort of teach you about what this disease is really about, because even if it's put in your face, like the booze is put in your face, I mean, how many years did the booze have to get put in my face before I even considered that I might have a drinking problem? And then even when I considered I might have a drinking problem, I could solve it this way. And then when even I said, you know, I think I have a drinking problem, then it was another year or two before I even did anything about it, and that was only when I was crushed. So, you know, it takes a long time to even see what the problem – it took me a long time to even see what the problem was. And then get this. Once I saw what the problem was, the drinking, I found out it wasn't even the problem. You know, how's that for a kick in the ass? Once you discover what your problem is, and you come to the Alcoholics Anonymous, and you hang around these rooms, and you look around, and everybody's crazy, and you're crazy, and nobody's drinking, and you realize drinking's not even the problem. So if it took me 15 years to get to the point where I looked some guy in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking, and then I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, how many years do you think it takes before I even get a sense of what the problem is? Maybe another 15, 20 years to get rid of those old ideas so that the scales start falling and you actually see what the problem is. I mean, you think you know what the problem is, but you're wrong. But you're wrong. And so I'm just going to talk about my experience. Maybe it's not going to be your experience. You know, you don't have to get all upset. You know, as alcoholics, somebody will get upset, but that's okay. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. That's what it says. So I never thought that. I always thought whenever I was disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. But that's another old idea that I had to get rid of. So in any event, it says in the big book, it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless. They are irritable. They are discontented, disturbed, diseased. Unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. Men and women drink because they're restless, irritable, and discontented. They drink when they're sober. Because if you're an alcoholic and you're sober, it means you're going to be restless, irritable, and discontented. And so I drank alcohol because alcohol was the drug that worked the best for me. That's just the deal. No woman, no suit of clothes, no car, no amount of money, no title, no nothing ever worked quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. And I suppose if alcohol did for me today what it did for me when I was 18 years old, I'd still be drinking it. But, you know, the deal is alcohol doesn't work for me anymore, hasn't worked for me for a long time, and so I don't drink it. But the sad news for me is alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and I hurt a lot of people. When you come in here, what the book says, and a lot of this stuff, you know, this is not original stuff. You know, I mean, I would like to think as I grow older in AA, as I grow older in AA, and I experience life more and more, and life sort of like sandpapers me down, to all of a sudden start fitting more in line with what they're talking about in this book. You understand? Because getting rid of the drinking is just like, let me tell you something, that's like chipping paint off the Queen Mary. That's like the least of the, I mean, it's important, but getting rid of the drinking is just the mere beginning on this deal. Y'all probably figured that out right away. I mean, it's an absolute necessary thing, but there's a reason why there's thousands of meetings all over the world with millions of people that go to it and none of them are drinking. And they go to them for 20, 30 years. Because the drinking is just the ante in the poker game. That's the ticket into the stadium. That's not even the game. That's why it says alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. How's that for a kicker? Here's the deal. I go for 15 years of drinking, running around, hurting people, hurting my, you know, Dr. Carl Menninger in the book Man Against Himself, written in the 30s, said in the chapter on alcoholism, an alcoholic says, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. They're self-destructive. You know, I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with me. What's wrong with me, you know? It's whatever, all alcoholics, let's say sit around and we think about, what do we think about? What do alcoholics think about? Our feelings, you know. Why do I feel like this? What am I feeling? Why do I feel sad? What's going to fix me? I need this. I need that. Running around all over the planet trying to figure it out. And then one day, after about 10 or 15 years, I got, and people sometimes would come up to me and talk to me about my drinking, but, you know, they don't know what the hell's going on, you know. They don't know, you know, if I only had my girlfriend back, or if I only had more money, or if I only had a new car, or whatever, I'd be okay and mind your own business. But one day it occurred to me that I might have a drinking problem. I might be drinking too much. But it wasn't such a big deal, and things weren't that bad. And So I went for another 2 or 3 years, and maybe I, like the book says, switched from wine to beer, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then one day it occurred to me that I did have a drinking problem. I said, I think I have a drinking problem, but I couldn't stop. You know, by the time you figure you have a drinking problem, you can't stop. And then what do you do? I couldn't envision, not only can't you stop, I couldn't envision life without drinking. I couldn't envision life without drinking. I couldn't think, I mean, what am I going to do without drinking? And you know, I'm just talking about the symptom now. I'm not even talking about the disease. I'm just talking about the symptom. And then one day it got so bad. It got so bad. I was 31 years old. It was December 25th, Christmas. It was Christmas Day. It got so bad that in my, quote, bachelor pad, that was my plan. I was going to be the Hugh Hefner of Miami. But because of a lot of bad breaks and misunderstandings, I know you're laughing, you don't know what it's like. But because of a lot of bad breaks and misunderstandings, it never quite panned out so well. And then one day, at 3 o'clock in the morning, it got so bad on Christmas Day that I got down on my knees, and in front of my TV set, a TV evangelist preacher, I said the sinner's prayer and invited the Lord to come into my life to fix me. Because I had no idea, let me tell you this way, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, I had no clue as to what was wrong with me. All I knew is I was desperate. I was unhappy. I was screwed up. I was bankrupt. I had no clue. 3 o'clock in the morning. They say there's more suicides during this time of the year. I know because I'm a self-pityaholic. Nobody knows how to do self-pity. Let me tell you something. I took self-pity to an art form. I set it to music. You know what I mean? Only the lonely. You know, I'm Mr. Blue. Rainy days and Mondays. Running on empty. I know all the good songs to play while you're drinking and feeling sorry for yourself. You know, man, I can do sorry for myself like that. You know what I mean? I could be in a leper colony surrounded by people with terminal cancer and thinking about why, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, I mean, all I want to do is think about me and what's wrong with me. So you can imagine, and I don't know about you guys, I don't know how many of you guys have ever been in a state of despair during Christmas time where everybody looks like they're doing better than you. Everybody has somebody. Everybody's, you know, somehow everybody's rich, everybody's wealthy, everybody's married or has a girlfriend or something, and you're all alone. And so I had that deal going on. So I know what it's like to be going through a self-pity jag and drinking and being alone during Christmas time. And this is a tough time of the year for some alcoholics, for a lot of alcoholics. And so I got down on my knees, and that's how desperate I was. I asked the Lord to come to my life. But I still didn't know. I still had no clue. You know, I knew enough to know I was desperate and I was willing to do anything. You know, we'd have no problem here in Alcoholics. We'd have no problem in Alcoholics Anonymous ever if we could just keep that attitude going for about 25 years. You see, if I could keep you guys in a state of, I am bankrupt, my life is over, I am hopeless, I will do anything anybody tells me, you know what I mean? Just help me, I'm in pain. If I could just keep you in that state for about 20 years, I'd have like a shot with you sons of bitches, you know what I mean? I could be able to do something here, we'd be able to do some damage, but you know how we are. With our ego and our vanity, and we walk in here unemployable. 3 months later, we're underpaid. You know what I mean? They're taking advantage of me, you know? Doesn't take... Well, a month after I got down to my... I still didn't know what the problem was. I didn't even have a clue what the problem was. All I knew was I needed help. So a month later, on January 25th, that I took my last drink, I looked a guy in the eye, or like shortly after that, I looked a guy in the eye, and I said... This is what I said. I said, all of a sudden, everything was going wrong in my life. There was nothing right in my life. It was all horrible. But all of a sudden, everything became absolutely clear to me. It was so clear. And I'll tell you what was clear. It was the clearest thought in my mind. I mean, I'm 31 years old. I've been bankrupt and crazy for like 31 years, had no idea what the problem was. I thought I needed a gal. I thought I needed a car. And all of a sudden, it becomes absolutely clear. This becomes clear. Number one, I can't stop drinking. I don't know why it wasn't clear the day before. I don't know why it wasn't clear the week before that. I don't know why it wasn't clear the year before that. All I know is on January 25th, 1981, it was clear that I can't stop drinking. And look, if you've never experienced that, I don't know how to give that to you. You know what I mean? You either experience it or you don't. And the second thing that was clear to me is that my life was unmanageable. And I'd never seen the first step. And I'm not saying I said I'm powerless over alcohol. All I knew is I couldn't stop drinking, and my life was unmanageable. And this is the key. I knew that, or at least I believed, that it was unmanageable because I couldn't stop drinking. I sort of somehow linked the unmanageability of my life with the fact that I couldn't stop drinking. And at precisely that point in time, I looked a man in the eye, and this is what I said. I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. And he happened to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I wind up in here, picking up a white chip. And I stopped drinking. Haven't had a drink since then. But then now get this. I see that. I learn that. I say that. I stopped drinking. And I don't know how long it was after that, because I started reading the big book. You know, you can read the big book. You can read the words in the big book. You can do the steps, and you can do it pro forma, like as a matter of form. You know, and I suppose you get something out of that, you know, trying to work it. But you may work the steps for years before one day when you're 5, 10, or 15 years sober, you read a line in the big book, and all of a sudden it becomes absolutely clear to you. A line, you know, and I don't know when I understood that the drinking was a symptom of my disease. Just a symptom of my disease. I mean, I read it. I'd say it. I was doing these step meetings. It's just a symptom of my disease. Just a symptom. I don't know when I really realized that it was really just a symptom. Because to realize and understand it's just a symptom of your disease is to realize that it's not the disease. I want you to understand that. To realize it's just a symptom of the disease is to realize it's not the disease. You see, now, the interesting thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know when you go to an AA meeting, you're going to Alcoholics Anonymous, so you think it has something to do with alcohol, right? Would I be correct in that? I mean, I don't know. I'm an alcoholic. I couldn't stop drinking, so I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. Seems like a good place to go to me because it has alcohol in the name. I mean, if you're an alcoholic and you can't stop drinking, I figure you go to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So you go to a place called Alcoholics Anonymous because you have a drinking problem, because drinking's your problem, but nobody's drinking. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then when you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, you say, this is what you say. You say, my name's so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. And then you listen to people come up here and talk about their problems with alcohol. And what happens is over a period of time, and then you hear people say, don't drink even if your ass falls off, and there ain't no problem so big that a drink can't make it worse. You know, and they say, well, how can I solve this? They say, don't drink and go to meetings. You know, they say all that stuff about the drinking thing, right? My best day sober, worse than my worst day, whatever the heck they say. And this is what happens. You start getting the idea, which is not necessarily a bad idea, it's helpful, but you start getting the idea that your disease has something to do with drinking, without recognizing that you're crazy as a fucking loon right now and you haven't had a drink in 6 months. So it may take you, you know, 15, 20 years, and you may be sitting in a meeting one day and somebody like me is talking and you say, that's right, the drinking isn't really the disease. As a matter of fact, I haven't had a drink in 10 years and 5 years and 16 months and I'm nuts and I'm going crazy. And everything. That's right, it's just a symptom of the disease. And then you may say to yourself, well, then what's the disease? Right? You see, you know why you're laughing? Because you have no idea what the disease is. Now, how do you solve a problem when you don't even know what the problem is? You think the disease... You think it was, now it is, it does say in the book, as long as we stay. You know, it says one line in the book that I sort of argue with. I got to tell you something. I have a difference with the book. One line they say. They say as long as an alcoholic stays from alcohol, away from alcohol, he reacts sanely and normally like most people do. And I don't believe that's true. I don't believe staying away from alcohol will you necessarily react. As a matter of fact, staying away from alcohol, you might get crazier. You know, I'm staying away. I see a lot of dry drunks. Listen, if you're an alcoholic, drinking alcohol is a symptom of the disease. Then you learn that there are other symptoms. You know, like some others would say, I'll give you some symptoms, okay? Not the disease, but a symptom of the disease. Loneliness. Symptom of the disease of alcoholism. Anger. Symptom of the disease of alcoholism. You know. Self-pity. A symptom of the disease of alcoholism. How about coveting? Coveting, you know, needing things. Saying, I need this, I need that. I need to get this. I need to have a symptom of the disease of alcoholism. You know, well, you may find out as you go out into the world and associate with people and stay sober for a long period of time, you may find out, say, man, if those are all symptoms of the disease of alcoholism, I know a lot of people that have that shit going on and they're not even alcoholics. And now you'll be starting to learn something. You'll be starting to learn something. And you'll be learning what they learned about in the 12 and 12 in the big book, that this sort of life helps a lot of people. That's why they encourage church membership. You start realizing that the real nature of our disease is the nature of the disease of mankind as a whole. That whatever you have going for you that is causing you problems, all those symptoms you have, they got them all going for them out there. As a matter of fact, if you think you're surrounded by alcoholics in an AA meeting, you have no idea how many alcoholics you're surrounded by in life when you go out there. As a matter of fact, in the big book, if you read it, you'll see they hint about that. They say most people are emotionally disturbed and frequently. They don't say most alcoholics. They say most people are emotionally disturbed and frequently wrong. And so we have a crazy flipping world where people are killing each other, going nuts, and you say, what's going on here? And they're not all alcoholics. They're just all suffering from the dis-ease of being human. They're just suffering from the same disease you're suffering from. They just don't have any meetings to go to. They don't, you know, you see, when you're an alcoholic, you see, you're lucky. We're fortunate. Because when you're an alcoholic and you drink long enough, after about 15, 20 years, they arrest you for driving all under the influence. The wheels fall off and you die. But you see, if you're a lustaholic, or if you're a self-pityaholic, or if you're a spend-more-money-than-you-make-aholic, you understand? You can go on until the day you die and never understand what the problem is. Because they don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. You can be a miserable son of a bitch and angry all the time and hold down a job for 30 years. You can have all sorts of consequences. You can lose jobs, be on your fourth marriage, not be able to have a relationship, and never understand that these are consequences of being a holic. That these are consequences of being a holic. It's like right in your face. So we come in here thinking it's an alcohol problem, then we find out it's something else that's just a symptom. And then for the next 20, 30 years, you work on all the other symptoms. As a matter of fact, here's the great part. Most people, the reason they don't get it is they spend most of their time in AA talking about the symptoms and thinking about the symptoms. Most AA meetings, discussion meetings, and meetings you go to, all they want to talk about is the problem. They don't realize they're talking about the problem. They think they're talking about the disease. They're not talking about the disease. They're not talking about the solution. They're talking about the problem. Somebody's talking about how they can't get a relationship, how they're lonely. Somebody else is talking about how they're depressed. Somebody else is talking about how they're sad. Somebody else is talking about their money problems. They're all talking about their problems and their depression and all this sort of stuff. And they don't realize what they're really talking about is their symptoms. The symptoms of the disease of alcoholism. Because they don't have a basic idea what the real deal of what alcoholism is all about. And so they have a problem. If you don't understand what alcoholism is about, you're not going to understand what the solution to alcoholism is about, even though it's written all through the book. So, there's nothing wrong with this or right with this. It's just the nature of the beast. You know, you come in here thinking that alcohol is the problem. All they do is talk about alcoholism. Every meeting you go to, they talk about alcoholism. The newcomer, what is this statement was made to me? Most important person in the room. You know, it may take you, when all they're doing is talking about drinking, 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 drinking. And what do we, by the way, what do we hand out medallions for? Anybody ever do a birthday meeting? I mean, I love birthday meetings. They're great. But what do they hand out the medallions for? Not drinking. 20 years, not drinking. 30 years, not drinking. They don't hand out medallions for not feeling sorry for yourself. They don't hand out medallions for, you know, not coveting, not overspending. It's for not drinking. So you could actually spend, and I'm not putting down AA, I'm not deprecating, I'm just saying this is, I'm just sort of like giving you a point of view. After 34 years of sobriety, what I see, you can spend a lot of years in AA getting pats on the back and think you're moving forward because you put together yet another year of not drinking, another 10 years of not drinking, and never realize that you still feel as crappy as you felt the first 5 years. You got 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking, and say, I really established something because I got 20 years, realizing that you haven't progressed much since you had 5 years or 3 years. You certainly haven't gotten that being rocket in the fourth dimension of existence. You're certainly not experiencing much of heaven. You haven't lost fear of today, yesterday, and yesterday, today, and tomorrow. You haven't lost all the fear. You haven't experienced the relief from fear of financial insecurity, of fear of people. Maybe a little bit here, a little bit there. But you still worry a lot. You still got all that worry and that anxiety going on. What's that all about? When does that go away? So this is what you think. You think, well, that never goes away. You know, it's like that's the thought with alcohol. You say, I can't envision a life without drinking. I can't envision a life without worrying about money. I can't envision a life without worrying about whether or not I have a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a husband. I can't envision a life without worrying. I can't envision. So because you can't envision it, you think it's impossible. And so we ought to sort of settle. So you sort of settle. That's the sixth step. You settle. You know, instead of shooting for what this thing is all about, you sort of settle for stuff. That's the deal. So let me read this thing for you. I have a couple things I want to read, and then I want to talk about the real deal here. Now and then a serious drinker, and I've read these things before, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all, feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness. He will know loneliness as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. You know, you can experience loneliness, incredible loneliness, which is a symptom of the disease of alcoholism, cold stone sober. Cold stone sober. You can experience loneliness. Listen, I'll tell you something else. You can experience loneliness, cold stone sober, and not even know you're experiencing it. You could be lonely. You could be living a life of quiet desperation, lonely in your own skin, separated from all mankind, not plugged into anything, not feeling like you belong to anything, and not even realize you're lonely. Not even realize it's the problem. And even if you think it's the problem, not having any clue how to solve the problem. How's that? You might even realize, you know, man, I'll tell you, I'm just so lonely. I can never collect. I'm always lonely. You might even realize it and not have a clue how to solve that problem. You may think you'll solve it by getting laid. That doesn't solve it. You may say it's a clue to having a girlfriend, temporary solution. You understand what I'm saying? You may think it's solved by buying stuff and everything, but somehow, no matter what, you can never shake the loneliness. You can't shake the separation. And you know something? That's a symptom of disease, and it'll kill you, maybe not as fast as drinking, but it'll kill you nonetheless. Yeah, I'll tell you what, it'll certainly take a lot of fun off of your sobriety. It'll do that to you. So then they have this in here. You know, I had a, when I got divorced from my first wife, you know, when you have all this stuff going against you, you know what you ultimately realize? What you ultimately realize, when you realize what the disease is, okay, I'm going to tell you guys straight out what the disease is. You ready? How many people would like to know what this disease is? How many people would like to know? Okay. Well, if you don't want to know, you can leave. That's okay. I'm going to tell you guys what the disease is. You ready? You're the disease. You're the disease. It's you. That's why you can't see it. You're the disease. You don't have the disease. You are the disease. I am the disease. So here's the problem. How are you going to get rid of you? How are you going to get rid of you? You know, that's what this book is all about. It's about recreating you. If the disease centers in your mind, not your body, if all this stuff I'm talking about, the loneliness, the self-centeredness, the selfishness, the anger, the resentment, if all this stuff I'm talking about is just a symptom of the disease, then where's the disease? What's the disease? Well, the book says the disease centers in your mind, not your body. And your mind is up here, and I don't know how to get rid of that, I mean, except for brain surgery. And if you read what the book says is very simple. It says there's only one. It says selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on the toes of others, they retaliate, and then we find out that in the past we made decisions based upon self, which puts us in a position to be hurt. So an alcoholic is self-will run riot. I am self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. So how am I going to cure that? I said to my sponsor, he said, why do you do that? He said, why do you do the things you do? Why do you say the things you say? Why do you feel like you got to act this way and do this stuff and everything? And I say, well, that's just my personality. That's just the way I am. And he looks at me and he says, well, your personality is killing you. He's talking about me. He's talking about me and my personality. That's what Dr. Messenger, he said, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. It's not like some outside force. You don't need to have something coming against you in the world to destroy you. I'm perfectly capable of destroying myself in my thinking and the way I act. So how do you solve? How does AA, what's the solution? What's the AA solution? The AA solution is, it says above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. The selfishness is what keeps us away, what separates us, which causes all these problems, which is the underlying cause of all these problems. The separation from when I was divorced from my wife, my first wife, I had a son. And I had visitation rights with my son. Every Saturday or every Sunday I could pick him up. And one day I told him, I said, I'm going to take you to the zoo next Saturday. And I really meant it. I was going to take him to the zoo. It was all set up to go to the zoo on Saturday. Friday night, I went out with a girl named Sally. I still remember her name. It was Sally. And the next morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, I got up. I don't know how old I was, 28, 29, something like that. I got up, and Sally called me up. My son is waiting for me to pick him up and take him to the zoo. And she said, the girls and I are going out on the boat today. Me and the girls are going out on the boat. We'd like to invite you along. So I'm thinking, now I know I got my son waiting for me. He's 8 years old. Do you understand? He's waiting for me. His daddy's going to take him. And I got Sally and the girls. So I'm thinking, Sally, the girls, booze, the boat, maybe getting laid or something like that. You know what I mean? You understand? Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. You understand? I'm thinking that, and I'm thinking my son. You understand? That's why I laugh when I hear about this do the next right thing horse shit. You know what I mean? I mean that's good when you get around the 12th city. You know, Sally, I've never been able to do the next right thing in my entire life. You know what Dr. Young said? It says ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are the guiding forces of these men's lives, are suddenly cast over to one side, okay, and they become motivated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitude. You know what the big book says? It says selfishness, self-centeredness. It says driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. When we screw people over, when we hurt people, when we're irresponsible and we're bums and we hurt people, it isn't an intellectual thing. We're compelled to screw them over. We find ourselves screwing people over and rationalizing and telling us, I don't know what kind of disease I have. I have the kind of disease that I go with Sally and the girls knowing I'm hurting my son, and I don't even think about it. Somehow I just wind up on the boat. I wind up on the boat. You ask me, why'd you go on the boat? And you know, I might say, well, I know I was wrong. I don't know. I don't know. I just wind up on the boat. Listen, my son, Sally, my son, Sally, my son, Sally. Let me tell you something. I struggled with that for 30 seconds. It was anchors away. I was gone. Okay? Now, on the boat, you know what I'm doing? You know what I'm doing? I'm drinking. Because when you live your life like that, you know what kind of person lives his life like that? Hurting people, being irresponsible, bums live their lives like that. Now, I may have had a three-piece suit on, or, you know, I may be a lawyer, whatever, but basically I was a bum. I was about myself, and I was so. And when you live your life like that, and you're hurting people, and you're screwing over people, and you still have a conscience, you have a constitutional idea of who you are deep down, you know something? You know who you are deep down inside. You know, what does it say? You have to have a... You know who you are. I mean, where do those voices come from? When you're in the shower lathering up and you're in the car and all of a sudden out of the blue you hear somebody say to you, you're an asshole, you're a jerk, you don't deserve to live, you're never going to be okay, and you turn around and there's nobody there but you. That's you telling you what you really think about yourself. That's your reputation of you with you. And those voices don't go away to Venus on vacation. They're all the time with you. And where do you think it comes from? It comes from you who know you better than anybody knows you. You can't run away from you and who you are. I am the disease. And that's what I'm struggling with. And at the same time, I'm looking for the solution. And I think the solution is some gal. I think the solution is a boat. I think the solution is a car. I think the solution is money. And all that is it drives me deeper into the disease. I don't have a clue. And so I'm sitting there on the boat getting drunk because I'm going to tell you something. When you have that crap going for you and you're driven and you don't even know why you do the things you do, you just do crap. You know, you're intelligent, you were raised right, but you somehow do crap, you know, and it's stupid stuff and you get yourself in trouble and you don't even know you don't even see why you're there. I'll tell you something. You better drink. You need to drink when you're in a situation like that. You ain't gonna not drink, because to not drink is to feel crappy all the time. The only thing that gives you any relief is drinking. You're telling me this, I have to put down the only stuff in this world where I ever get any relief is the booze. If it wasn't for the booze, I would have blown my head off before I was 18 years old. And you tell me I gotta stop this crap? How am I gonna live life with the pukes I have to deal with in life and the bullshit I have to deal with in life without the drinking or the drugging or whatever the hell it is that I'm going to be doing? And the real problem, and I think the problem is her or it or them, and I'm the problem. That's what the book says. Selfishness, self-centered. It says above everything, we must get rid of this. We must, above everything, we must get rid of us. I mean, don't kid you. What are they saying? We must get rid of this selfishness. If I'm the selfishness, I mean, this ain't one of these things like the devil made me do it. This isn't one of the, listen, you're probably nice alcoholics. You're like, I understand. You're the kind of alcoholic say, Rush, you don't understand me. I'm basically a good boy. That's what my grandmother used to say to me. She says, Russell, you're basically a good boy. I'm not sure what that meant. I mean, you do terrible things, you do horrible things, but you're basically a good, Hitler's mother was probably saying, you know, he's basically a good boy. You know what I mean? No, let me explain something to you. Because until I accepted this, I wasn't really getting at the nature of the disease. I'm evil. Listen, that doesn't mean I won't do a kindly act once in a while. That doesn't mean I'm not compassionate once in a while. That doesn't mean, you know, I hate to see, you know, dogs get hurt. It doesn't mean, when I say I'm evil, I'm not talking about like evil like the devil. I'm talking about I'm a guy who most of the time, listening to my own devices, is basically thinking about me, worrying about me, and in this world I'll end up hurting people. I'm not really a good person. I mean, relatively, I'm a lot better than Adolf Hitler. I'm better than those people that are blowing up themselves and killing people. I'm better than terrorists and everything like that. I'm not as bad as a mass murderer. But, you know, on the scheme of things, you ain't looking at Jesus here. You understand what I'm saying? Left to my own devices, I'm not a good person. I'm not good. You know, that's what the big book says. You know what the big book says? I don't know. You ever figure out what they're actually saying? When they say, the root of our trouble is we're selfish, self-centered. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate. We make decisions based upon self. You ever figure out what they're really saying is you're really not good? You're really not a good person. You're really not a nice person to hang out. You're really not a good person to be married to. You're not really a person that anybody should trust with a job or trust anything important. You know, if you're not a person, if you don't realize that alcoholics aren't necessarily good, I don't suppose you need to do some business with alcoholics in the rooms. You know what I mean? Just find an alcoholic in the room and give him some money to do a job for you. You know? And then when he doesn't show up, you'll find out a little bit about alcoholism. You'll find out a little bit about how we are. And so the bottom line is, and so what does the big book says? Above all, with everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And then it says, God makes that possible. God makes that possible. God gets rid of the symptoms. God is the thing that motivates the psychic change that recreates you. That recreates you. That changes you. How do you get rid of you? The only way you get rid of you, that's why we have chapter of the agnostics. Now, you may think, as an alcoholic, you know what I want to think? Well, I'll just do the next right thing. I'll do better next time. I promise I won't drink anymore. I won't do that again. I swear to God I won't do that again. I swear in my mother's life I won't do that again. That's what I think will do it. And you know what it says in the big book? If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life would have solved this, we'd have been, but the needed power wasn't there. We had to find a power greater than ourselves which would solve our problem. And that's why we wrote a book where we have to talk about God. This sort of thinking, if you're agnostic, it has to be abandoned. And then it says this. Then it says this right here. It says, unbelievable. Then it says this little thing right here. Okay. When we sincerely took such a position, turning towards our lives towards God, focusing on God, we had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He provides everything you need if you kept close to him and performed your work well. Are you lonely? Focus on him. Perform his work. You feel like you have to have things. You're focused on things. You love things. Your whole life is about things. Focus on him. You won't need things. And I said to one of my mentors once, I said, when am I going to have financial security? He said, never. I said, what do you mean? It says, you know, fear of financial people and financial. He says, no. He says, you're always going to. He says, no, it's the fear will leave you. The fear leaves you. Fear leaves you. He doesn't promise you're going to make $1 million. He says, you'll always be broke. It just won't bother you. Well, you see, you know what an alcoholic thinks? Unless I have a girlfriend, my life's going to be terrible if I can't find a wife or a girlfriend. The girls think, unless I find a husband, my life's going to be terrible. They can't envision life without a husband or a boyfriend. Guys can't envision life without a girlfriend. Unless I have a job, unless I have this, you know, every alcoholic I know needs something in order to be okay. And then after he gets that something, he needs something else. And he needs the most needy, you know, Bill Wilson said, the next frontier, emotional sobriety, he says, our real problem is where we have unhealthy dependencies. If I'm looking at an alcoholic, I'm looking at a guy who's saying, I need, you know, as soon as you realize that you need something or you're missing something or you have to have something in your life to be okay, you automatically have decided that what you do have is crap. Once you say to yourself, I need to have this or I need to have that, you've already told yourself that you're insufficient and what you have right now is crap. You've already decided that you're not good enough right now. And if you're in a constant state of looking at other people and saying, you know, doing that, you know, listen, it's one thing to say, I need to drink. The other thing is, I need a car. I need this. It's always chasing stuff. It says, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Can you imagine that? You know, walking around I don't know when it happened. One day I was going to meetings because I needed a meeting. One day I was going to meetings because I needed a meeting. I'm not saying I don't need meetings, but one day I was going to meetings because I really needed a meeting. You ever hear somebody at meetings say, I really needed this meeting? You ever say to yourself, man, I really needed that meeting? You ever walk out of meetings and says, man, I'm glad I went to that meeting. I needed that meeting. You know, I went through years going to meetings because I needed a meeting. And I'm glad I went to the meetings. And then one day I found myself going to meetings, not necessarily because I was driven to go to the meetings because I needed a meeting. I found myself going to meetings to see if there was anybody there I could help. One day I found myself going to meetings to see whether there was anybody there I could help. I found myself, in a sense, driven almost just as hard to go to the meetings to see if there was anybody there I could help as I was when I was going to meetings to see whether I could help myself. You understand what I'm saying? And that's what it says here. It says, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans, designs. A person who's maturing this thing, he's going to find that the things that he's doing are going to be less invested. It's going to be like the Good Samaritan, less invested in helping himself and less invested in his feelings, more invested in other people's feelings and try to help them out. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. That's the losing of the fear. We were reborn. Now, I know we were reborn has a Christian connotation, born again. But they were reading the Bible. But that's what they're talking about. We become completely different people. I am the problem. How do I change me? How do I become a completely different person, driven and motivated by a whole different set of ideas? Only with God's help, according to this. Only by staying close to him and performing his works. And it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure that we are ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly, utterly to him, focusing on him. I'm going to read one last thing, and then I just want to close it up by making one more, explaining one more thing. It says, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. Just to the extent that we rely on him and rely on what he wants us to do, do we have serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. I had there's two things that are absolutely essential. I mean, there's a lot of things that are essential, open-mindedness, but the two things that are essential that I can't really give, I wish I could somehow give this to people. It's not for me to give. I don't know how they get it. I don't know how they catch it. I've sponsored hundreds of guys. Some have it, some, I don't know. There's two things that I just can't do it. One is desire, and the other is faith. One is desire, and the other. The reason why I'm always talking about God, the reason why I'm always quoting the same things, is because that's it. That's it. That's the deal. You don't have to believe me. I know if you stay sober for 20 or 30 years and you get this deal the way you're supposed to get it, I know you'll be saying the same thing I am, because that's it. That's the deal. I was talking to a guy. I'm not going to reveal who it was because he was talking about some issues he's going through and stuff he's going through, and he was explaining it to me, and he wasn't explaining to me anything I don't understand. He was explaining to me what it's like to be sober a few years and still have a lot of problems. And we started talking about stuff. You know, there's a quote in the Bible. You know, there's a great quote. It's all over the Bible. You know, in Ecclesiastes, you ought to read it sometime. The King Solomon, the smartest guy in the world, says, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. He says, I've had everything in the world. I'm the richest guy in the world. I got all the babes. I got everything. It says it's all bullshit. It's all about me, 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 vanity. This stuff isn't new. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. You know, so it was taught, and the Bible says you can't please God. It's not God and mammon. You know what the book says? The big book says the central fact in their lives was God. The number one thing has to be, you know what the big book says? It says, see to it, your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Once you make this decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen. That's what the promises say. We realize that he is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. The whole book is about him, him, him. By the way, you might want to look at the steps. You might want to check out the steps sometimes, you know? You might want to check out the steps, you know, and check out where you wind up after step 10. You might want to check out step 11, which says now that you have a relationship with him, you try to improve that relationship. Somehow they miss that one. And then you go out and tell, that's the deal. It's all about him. That's the deal. So he was talking, and I'm just going to throw this out there. They have a great line in step 7 where they talk about how we change through 1,000 forms of humiliation, 100 forms of humiliation and final crushing of our self-sufficiency. And we were talking about, you know, that when he came in here, he was totally focused on God. He was totally focused on God, and he was feeling good. And then all of a sudden, he found himself, I don't know, not so focused. And I said to him this, I said, because you looked around. He says, look, I said, you were looking around. You looked around, you saw a blonde over there, and you saw a car over there, and you saw a job over there, and you saw something. He says, yeah, you started looking around at the world, the worldly climate. You started looking around at the world. He says, yeah. And you started getting dissatisfied with what you had. You weren't looking at him. You had divided loyalties. You were looking at God when you went to AA, and then you walked outside and you looked at the world. Sometimes you're in AA, and you're looking at God, but you're also looking at the blonde in the front row. And you were saying, well, she's not sitting next to me. She's sitting next to him. Or you found yourself in a world where they're all watching TV and looking at this, and every once in a while you go to AA and some guy's talking about God, and you're looking at this and this, and all of a sudden you're dissatisfied. Things aren't good. It's a tough deal. And I said, what I found in my life is for the first 10, 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was doing hand-to-hand combat with the world. Struggling, you know something? This alcoholism, I don't care what you want to call it, alcoholism, holism, whatever, thingism, you know, Bill Wilson said it's unhealthy dependencies. You know, whatever it is, you get in here and the struggle is, okay, now you're sober and you're struggling with the needs, the wants, the stuff, the things, all the material stuff, all the stuff they're talking about at discussion meetings when they're whining about how things aren't going well. And I struggle with that stuff, and I struggle with that, and I lose it. It's taken away. The money's taken away. The gal's taken away. The relationships. And I figure out, and in the end, as I get through it, and I focus on him, it all drives me closer and closer to him. If I have the desire, if I don't have the desire to get better, and I don't have the desire to follow these people, and I don't have the faith, it doesn't drive me towards him. It drives me towards the bottle. It drives me to feeling sorry for myself. It drives me for being jealous of other people. It drives me to being envious of other people. It drives me to resentment and anger and feeling crappy about my life. That's where it drives me. If I have him, I finally look and I say, well, I somehow, some way, focus on him and more be more concerned with what he would have me be, whether I have money or I don't have money, whether I'm with a girl or not a girl, and I get closer and closer to him. And as time goes by, and believe me, for a guy like me, that took 15, 20 years to realize that I might have a drinking problem, for a guy like me, it takes a lot of crap. I got, just like the book of James, you know, rejoice when you have troubles. I had to go through a lot of problems having to do with money, having to do with women, having to do with sex, having to do with jobs, you name it. Had to do with health, you know, having to do with all the vanity stuff, having to do with cars, you name it. I had to go through a lot of crap, a lot of bad. You're having a battle now with your job. You're having a battle now with money. You're having a battle now with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or romance. I've been through it all 5,000 times. I've been through the restless nights. You're in here. You're going to be battling the world over and over again for 10 years, 15 years, 20. And you know what happened to me? What happened to me is when I was into the battles, it always came out the same way because I always ended up focusing on him. I can't change the things I cannot change, And in the end, I was just left with him and to accept the way things are and then try to do the thing that I thought he'd want me to do, which is maybe to help an alcoholic, and I get close to him. And the closer I got to him, the less I looked at them. The closer I got to him, the less I looked at her. The closer I got to him, the less I looked at the cars. The less I needed that stuff. And what I find happens is over a period of time, and I wish this was like an instant coffee. I wish this was like you walk in here and you get it like that. Over a period of time, I find myself all of a sudden less needy of things, less in need. That doesn't mean I can't have them. I have a nice car. You know, I have a house. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't have them, but I become less focused and needy of those things. And more, I need to be closer to him. And all of a sudden, I find myself less worried, less upsettable. But I've got to admit that part of this disease of alcoholism is this addiction to everything outside of him. This absolute compulsion and addiction to have and need stuff and things, which, quite frankly, hurts my relationship with other people. Hurts my ability to have a marriage, hurts my ability to really care about other people and not think about myself, has me always worrying about what I have and what I don't have and how I look and how I don't look and how I'm doing and how I'm not doing. I mean, I'll tell you something, that gets really old real fast. You know, to be in that deal for a long period of time, unfortunately, everybody, it's like I said to this guy, I said, you'll be okay in 20 years. You know, don't worry. I mean, we all have to go through the process. If you're going through that process, if you're going through the troubles and the process, that's just the process you have to go through. That's what we have. It doesn't happen like that. It takes time. But once you're out of it, you do get that feeling that you're no longer dependent. And here's the crazy thing. And I'm going to end it with this. The crazy thing is this. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, you know, here I am. I don't worry about the stuff I used to worry about. I don't think about the stuff I used to think about. I don't spend a lot of time on stuff that is none of my business. I don't spend a lot of time arguing with people or trying to talk people into doing stuff or being a certain way when they're not really interested. You know, I mean, 80% to 90% of the stuff I used to think about or talk about or be interested in, I'm just not even involved anymore. You understand what I'm saying? And I don't worry. I don't sit around worrying. It's not that I don't have a job or I don't do worrying about all that stuff. And now the stuff is like coming to me. It's coming to me, but it's not. I don't know how to explain it. It's not that important. I don't focus on it. It comes. It comes. It goes. It goes. You know, good day, bad day. They're all. You know, most of you guys know me. They say, "How's it going?" I say, "It's all wonderful." You come up to me and say, "How's everything?" I said, "It's unbelievable. It's great." So I want, and I'm not just saying that just to say it. I mean, to me, every day is incredible. It doesn't matter. They tell me you got cancer. Hey, it's wonderful. It's great. You know, to have that kind of life because of this deal is unbelievable. So thank you very much. God bless you. Okay.
Thank you, Russell. That was wonderful. Before we close, I want to introduce our secretary. I think Mike Chase is going to do that for us tonight.
As Ronnie would say, I'm your Plan B secretary for tonight. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Mike Chase. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going to be passed around. This is the time you put money in the baskets to help pay for the rent for this place that we have tonight. Thank you for your share tonight, by the way. As the baskets are going around, I've asked Zach to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group and around South Florida are now calling themselves recovered rather than recovering and what exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Give Zach a round of applause.
Zach, recovered alcoholic. recovered. Recovered but not cured, that presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thanks, By the way, did anybody else have coffee and sort of jacked up tonight? Because it's got me going. Zach was our coffee maker. Give him a round of applause. That's it. Makes Starbucks look decaf. Around here, we do 1940-style big book sponsorship from the Ford to the second edition of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach to bring him, his loving arms back to us. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Could I see a show of hands of the recovered alcoholics in the room? If you do not have a sponsor, those are the people you might want to talk to. They'll help you get you reconnected to God. Let's see, does anybody need a sponsor in the room that's brave enough who just wants to raise your little hand and maybe get somebody to get you back to God? If not, come up to the meeting afterwards. We can help you get set up with somebody. That's what this is all about, getting back to God, which is why we call Alcoholics and God, actually. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study. Fellowship and pizza starts around 6:30. We got Big Book Study, which starts at 7:15. If you should require a Big Book, which you should get one, we have them on sale for here, our cost, your terms. We have the large print editions on sale. We also got some Big Book dictionaries because some of the words are sort of confusing, like honesty and thorough and stuff like that I never really knew. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15. We ask that you be courteous and begin to start around 8:15 also. Once again, thanks, Russell, for a share tonight. We're not here next week. We will be here the night after New Year. So if you want to start the year 2015 with God and an alcoholic, we'll see you then. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike Chase. And before we close, I just want to let everybody know that we podcast all of these sessions on alcoholicsandgod.org, so you can listen to tonight's share as well as Russell the past 7 or 8 weeks, however long he's been here with us. And we also have a Big Book Study on Monday nights. It starts at 7:15. We ask everybody to come out and check that meeting out with us as well. That's where we kind of sit down, go through the Big Book, page 0 through page 164, page by page, we break it down and we learn. We do come in here on Thursday nights to have speakers share their experience on that information. We invite you to both. And before we close, I just want to thank Russell one more time. We'll take a minute and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Doesn't matter.
too much accumulation. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
I know that this must be heaven.
How could so much love be inside of you? Shine of my life, yeah. That's why I'll always stay around. You are the apple of my eye. Forever you stand for, yeah. You are the sunshine.
There was a secret chord David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composed the high. Stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Oh, long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease. Sweet hymns of joy, oh, in grateful chorus raise we, let all within us praise his holy. Your voice. tried my best, and it wasn't much. I couldn't feel, so I learned to touch. I tell the truth, I didn't come to fool you. Look, and even though it all went wrong, I'll stand before the Lord of Song with nothing on my tongue but heart.